Joining me now on our special edition, I call this special edition of Our Town because it seems like everything is COVID-19 related, and that's a good thing because we're getting information out. Well, some of the information that needs to get out is how we are going to remain financially stable during all this, and the new CARES Act that was implemented this past Friday, signed into law by President Trump, is going to positively affect even our community. And Ron Green is joining me right now from social distancing. Good morning, Ron.
Hello, George. Good to be with you.
So let's talk a little bit about this now. I think most people know by now that the IRS is going to be sending out money to taxpayers. Let's quickly deal with the potential for scamming. Let's get that out first.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, certainly, the IRS is determining based on your most recent filed tax return what you're eligible to receive. And under certain income thresholds, we'll receive a check. The IRS has your information. So if you in the past have filed your tax returns and either paid your tax payment or received your tax refund via direct deposit, they already have your account number. If they've sent you a check, they already have your address. It's already becoming a thing right now that people are calling consumers representing themselves as individuals from either the Treasury Department or the IRS saying, hey, I need your personal information so we can get you your money. They will not do that. They already have it. And please don't fall victim to that scam.
Exactly. Now, if they're at my front door saying, hey, I got a wad of cash for you, that's a different thing altogether.
Well, maybe a different story, George.
Maybe a different story. Yeah. Yes. All right. Yeah. So let's talk about some of the things available. I know that employers, from what I've heard, employers are kind of liking this package so far. Tell me a little bit about how this is going to affect them.
You bet. Well, under the CARES Act, the stimulus package that was signed into law, as you mentioned before, there is an unprecedented partnership between the U.S. Treasury Department and the Small Business Administration. And basically what they're allowing banks to do, and this is any bank that's authorized to make an SBA loan, to make a loan to a small business owner. They're going to ask for very limited information. The business owner can borrow up to 2.5 times their average monthly payroll and payroll benefits expense prior to the COVID event. So if you had a payroll cost, let's just pick a number of $100,000 a month, you could borrow $250,000. The incentivizing behind this is that they want you to reinvest that money to make sure that your personnel, your people are still on the payroll, keep them paid, pay their benefits. And at the end of this, then you can go back and they'll say, how much of that money did you actually reinvest into ensuring that your people got paid? And there'll be a calculation to determine that that amount of the loan may be forgiven. You won't have to pay it back. And again, there's going to be qualifiers, so I don't want to tell you whether you won't or will be receiving debt forgiveness. But if you borrow money to keep your people on board, to pay your rent as agreed, most of that expense will qualify for the debt forgiveness piece. So our bank, as an example, we're rolling out and going to be accepting applications on, and it's called the Paychecks Protection Program. We're going to begin accepting applications on April 2nd. We're still not quite sure how the SBA wants us to process this. So essentially, we're expecting a tidal wave of small businesses to apply. We already have about 50 people in the community of Florence who've asked about it. And then we'll start and we'll see how quickly we can get the money out.
All right. So let me ask you this here. Now, a lot of businesses, because of the social distancing order and that, have had to close. Is this something a business that is currently closed can use to continue to pay their employees, or do they have to be open and operating?
Yeah, it is. That's the odd thing is that they want, obviously, you to bring your employees back. But if we're under our stay in place orders by the governor, which we currently are in a restaurant, as an example, well, they can't bring their people physically back, but they can keep them on the payroll and keep them paid. So the concern I have personally is that this event isn't going to be over in 90 days. We may have the virus under control, but getting consumers back to where they're comfortable spending money and getting back to normal is going to take some time. So, yes, that's the idea is to pay your employees, whether they're working or not. That's up to you and whatever the social distancing guidelines will allow you to do. But if you do that, then you would be likely eligible for the debt forgiveness.
But you talk about getting back to normal, say, in 90 days. Well, isn't that part of the reason for doing this is so that people still continue to have money in their pockets so that when this is over, they are a little bit more comfortable spending some of that money?
Well, absolutely. That's the hope. And I want to be as positive as the next person as to how quickly the U.S. and our local economy can come out of this. But in Florence, our economy is basically tourism driven. And I still have the question, though, even though the money may be there, how comfortable psychologically are people, you know, coming back doing the things around, you know, a crowd of people that they were doing before? When will that happen? They're talking nationally about the next wave of the COVID virus and the next season. And does this become an annual thing? And so I still feel there'll be a little bit of consumer fear. But that's the hope with this program, is by keeping people employed and paid, that once we are absolutely certain that the virus contagion is behind us, that they can resume their life of paying their bills, spending money, and stimulating the economy.
All right, let me ask you a question from a perspective that I've been hit three times already. Someone's asked me this. It seems like the government or the Federal Reserve is just printing money. Where is all this money coming from if we're in this crunch already?
Well, I mean, the Federal Reserve creates money by selling U.S. Treasury bonds. And so, you know, they are continuing to issue new treasury instruments for cash. But certainly you're right. I mean, the supply and demand of currency, going back to before currency even existed and was the gold standard, is literally what's available. And, you know, temporarily the dollar gets devalued when literally the federal government creates more debt and prints more cash. But it is a form of stimulus. It is kind of that monetary policy that the Federal Reserve has to kind of do things to stimulate the government. But, you know, it does have long-term potential concerns. But I think right now I am very supportive of what the federal government is doing, both through this stimulus package and at the Federal Reserve, to invest in the long-term, you know, sustainability of our economy.
But I know
essentially the U.S. government and the U.S. economy is going to go into debt. But I think we have no choice.
Right. And I noticed one thing, that for a moment the stimulus had a positive impact, but then new coronavirus numbers come out and it sort of has a negative effect on like the market and stuff like that. Do you feel like we're going to see this roller coaster for quite some time now?
Well, gosh, I'm going to say that we should all look towards the medical professionals and the scientists on that. But, you know, looking at what all of us are hearing in the media, so that's all that I'm repeating, George, is that this is a virus, and viruses, we can build up immunity either through herd immunity or through some formal vaccine, but they also can mutate. And so, you know, there is a high likelihood, it sounds like, that there could either be the potential of this virus, just like the cold and flu, you know, making its annual cycle around the globe. And it's just, can we keep up with that and develop, of course, vaccines to keep most of us healthy?
Well, and hopefully that won't be the case. Hopefully this will be like some of the other ones we've had in recent years, and it'll just die out with the season. As far as banking goes, though, you had mentioned before, we had talked before about how that after 2008, a lot of the banks, or many of the banks, have positioned themselves differently so that they are able to withstand a situation like this and even help the community. And I guess that is what Oregon Pacific Bank has positioned themselves to do, if I'm not correct, right?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, the 2008, the Great Recession, was a very difficult time on the banking community across the country. And, you know, in Oregon alone, there were six banks that failed. And during the 08 recession, literally became insolvent. No depositors lost their money. That was because of the formation of, you know, almost 100 years ago of the Federal Depository Insurance Corporation. But depositors were protected, but banks couldn't make it. And that was largely because they had themselves highly concentrated into one or two loan types, and generally loans that were paid from the sale of or development of real estate. Well, we knew what happened back then because of how much inventory was in the market, how much speculation was going on in the market. We saw, depends on where you lived, anywhere from a 40 to 60% decline in real estate values. And when a bank makes a loan that its sole source of repayment is the sale of that property, and it loses more than half of its value, that bank's loan becomes have no value, and they have to write it off. So that's what precipitated the bank's problems then. Since then, banks are much more capitalized than we were entering the last recession. Our loan portfolios are, I'm speaking globally of the entire industry, much more diverse than they were back then. So we have more baskets, and we have eggs in many baskets. And I'd like to believe, I know it is in our organization, that underwriting standards are solid. Banks are conservative lenders, or at least they should be, because we're not lending our money. We're lending your money, the depositor's money. So we need to be, you know, appropriate in making sure we're structuring loans that have a valuable source of repayment through some sort of viable plan. So that's been, I think, much stronger since the Great Recession. So generally, our bank included in this, but the banking industry, whether it be national banks to the small local banks like us, are much stronger than they were in 08, much more diversification in their investment, their lending, and strong policies and practices.
All right. So quickly, what other good things are you seeing in the CARES Act other than this benefit for businesses? Are there other things there that make you excited?
Yeah. Well, again, going back to the Great Recession of 08, the Federal Depository Insurance Corporation created a temporary program, which was called TAG, Transaction Account Guarantee. And the FDIC issues depository insurance up to a certain threshold, and that's $250,000. But it's based on ownership, meaning, you know, George, if you had $250 in a bank, you would have a level of insurance in your name. If your wife had $250 in her name, then she has separate insurance of $250. So there's $500 right there. If the two of you combined, that's an additional $250. So that's $750 in coverage. Well, back in the 08 recession, they created this TAG, Transaction Account Guarantee, that gave unlimited depositor insurance for a period of time. So the CARES Act gave the authority to the FDIC to reinstitute that program. So we have not heard any details as to when and this will come out, but we're expecting the FDIC to announce that because there is concern, you know, and I think a lot of people don't understand how the FDIC works, and they think about, honestly, it's a wonderful life. And the fact that banks fail, and banks can fail, but to put the depositor at comfort, the FDIC has stepped in to protect them. So we've had some clients that are concerned about just banking and the economy and are very doomsday from their perspective, who want to pull out large sums of cash. And we caution people against that. You know, if we can't talk them out of it, we'll get their cash for them. But if you keep it under your mattress, you keep it in your safe, you keep it in a can in your backyard, it's not insured. And you put yourself at risk of being a victim of scam or theft or robbery. So I'm hoping that the FDIC comes out with this unlimited guarantee of depositor insurance. I think that will be the security blanket that the depositors need to feel comfortable that, okay, we're going to get through this just like we did, you know, 12 years ago.
Well, let's hope that this runs its course quickly. Consumer confidence returns to a nice high, and we see everybody kind of get back to normal soon.
Yeah, I think just a couple of closing things I would say, George, is in all banks, again, I know that I appreciate the opportunity to be here and speak on behalf of Oregon Pacific Bank, but if you have a loan with any financial institution, credit union, bank of any kind, and you're struggling to make those payments because of the events that we're in, please call them. They will work with you. Every bank will work with you. If you can't make your house loan, your car loan, your business loan, none of us want to see anybody fail, want to see any business fail. So it's in our best interest to work with you, and every bank will do that. Secondly, there's tremendous amount of anxiety going on around, you know, our community and around the country and around the world. You know, we're going to get through this, and please take the opportunity to take a breath, you know, think rational and positive thoughts, and be kind to everybody. Yeah, it's a tough time, and we're going to get through this together, but we've got to be mindful of how we react to the situation and how we treat each other.
Well, you know, and that's an important part of it. I was writing something earlier today talking about how the mantra after 9/11 was never forget. And,
yeah.
And we had a period of time, hours, days, weeks, and even months afterwards, where we found compassion, consensus, and love for one another. But at some point, we went back to the backbiting and all that stuff. And it's situations like this that brings us to the forefront. So my encouragement to everybody is not to never forget, but to always remember how we treated each other during these times and continue this past,
yeah,
you know, any foreseeable future.
There's no better advice than that. So thank you,
Ron. Thank you so much for sharing. And, you know, it's so good to have the local presence of a bank. I know we have other banks in town and other banks that are community minded in that, but it's nice to have a central hub and someone we can talk to get information from on a regular basis, and we do appreciate that. Thank you so much.
Absolutely, George. Thanks for having me.
What's happening with Cyuse Law Schools during the COVID-19 outbreak? We'll talk with Andy Grizz-Kowiak, superintendent of Cyuse Law Schools, next.